And there we go. Welcome back to another episode of Mead and Moonlight, the Pagan Folk Podcast. We're back again another week, Kuhn and Niklas. Hello, Kuhn.
Hello, Niklas.
How are you doing?
Well, how am I doing? Well, in these times, it's always sort of weird to say, yes, I'm doing great. But then again, there's nothing too major to complain. Sometimes life is a struggle. Past 2 weeks, I've been sort of struggle, but I'm managing. Life can be hard. Your mind can play tricks on you, but it's all good. I was really looking forward to recording recording this next episode. I really enjoyed the last episode. I hope you guys did too. We're getting some really cool feedback and input from you guys. So that's really great. I really like how this sort of new shining light in my week has appeared. And how about you, Niklas?
Well, you know, life has its ups and downs, I guess. So I think my experience in that regard is similar to yours. But I'm also very excited to record a new episode now. And I've just the thing that I wouldn't have known before we started doing this project, we do some light editing on the podcast, or, you know, everyone sort of edits their own part and then I edit them together, and I have to edit out so much of my own breathing and just weird sounds that my mouth does that apparently my mouth does when I'm listening to you. So that's awkward.
I think I have the same thing, and I caught myself that when I start talking, I often do in front of my sentence. Maybe there's probably a lot of it in there. So sorry, guys, for notifying you, and you'll probably be hearing it a lot this episode. And I also have very sensual mouth noises as well, which is pretty intimidating coming from me. I feel sorry for my girlfriend.
Well, I don't think she usually doesn't hear you that amplified, though, probably.
Well, we think no, she definitely doesn't. We don't talk through amplified microphones all the time at home at all.
But how would you add the cool voice effects otherwise? I don't
know.
I always use loads of delay on my voice just to talk to people.
Yeah, I use reverb all the time as well. I have this weird megaphone and I just go around the street screaming. It's true. Oh well.
Nice. Also, you know, as you can see, everything's been super normal and just everyday business in our lives. I hope your lives are going okay as well. You know, it's weird times and I don't know. It's still weird to just go about your daily business and to sort of be like, oh yeah, I guess I still need to get new groceries, and then you go and then everyone is wearing a mask. But yeah, let's not delve into that too deep. Let's focus on the nice things. And this week we decided to talk about one of my favorite things of playing music or of being in a band, which is playing live. We want to talk about all the things that we enjoy about playing live, maybe also about the things that suck, how, you know, how emotional you can get on stage sometimes, and maybe little things like pre-show rituals or what's the correct way to coil a cable. We're going to delve into that now. So, Kuhn,
yes.
Do you like playing live?
I bloody hate it. No. Okay, so, well, there's two sides, yeah? I love playing live. One thing I dislike quite a bit is just before, but playing on stage, being live, being in front of a great audience is, oh my god, it's sort of, because being in a pagan folk band, it's sort of, you have to work really hard sort of to maneuver yourself in this niche scene. But then the cool thing is the audience is also sort of a niche thing, because it's, I think, one of the coolest and most emotionally and spiritually involved audience that there's out there. So just getting up on stage and realizing that I have the privilege to play in front of that crazy specific audience again, that is out of this world, literally.
Yeah, true. It's really special. I think we have a bit of trouble with our Wi-Fi, or probably with my Wi-Fi connection tonight. So if there's any weird jumbling or cutting into each other's sentences, that's my fault, or rather the fault of my internet provider. So just be aware.
It's fine. It's fine. Up to now. And
But I think I interrupted you there.
Oh, did you? Well, I didn't hear you. Thank you, German internet. Just got Nicholas out. Let's make this a solo thing then, eh? While I was caught up in my euphoric speech about why it's so cool to be live in a pagan folk band, do you also like to play live?
I do. Actually, I'd even go so far and say it's my very favorite thing about being in a band. It's playing live. It's the part of it that I enjoy the most, over writing music, over recording music, over rehearsing music. Playing music live in front of an audience is my favorite thing, I think.
Yeah, I can see why. It's sort of, you put in weeks, months, and all over time, years, to create this musical, very commercial term, but product. And then it's finally time to showcase that and see how people are able to react, and if the song, oh by the way guys, this is definitely the word of the podcast from my end, how it resonates with the audience. And it's I think it would also be up on my list, and I think of many a pagan folk musicians that playing live sort of was the ultimate payment and not in money or merchandise sales, but in effort repaid.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I can still remember very distinctively that, I think we've mentioned it before, but Waldkauz is actually the first band I'm ever part of. So my first Waldkauz concert was my first concert just in general. And I remember the days leading up to that, I was thinking like, oh, wait, what if I don't actually like playing live? You know, I thought I'd like the idea, but what if I don't actually enjoy being on a stage and performing music live? And then we started playing, and it was just the greatest feeling in the world, just being up there on stage with other people and sort of getting into that zone and having an audience that sort of mirrors what you put in, like the energy that you put in. It's just the best.
That's actually interesting that you thought about it that way. Like, okay, I'm here now, but am I actually going to enjoy this presentation, basically? And that sort of, when you said that just now, I was like, okay, I'm thinking back on my first thing, and I would also say maybe the nerves were more prevalent than the sort of excitement, which a dirty little secret, it maybe still is. I don't know if people have met me just before a gig. I'm very hard to meet just before a gig. I'm like, oh my god, why am I doing this? The nerves are killing me. So, sometimes it feels crazy that you're actually going to present this. It's not necessary if you don't have to pay the bills with it. I'm very happy that you liked likes performing because I'm very thrilled to see guys perform, actually. So thank you, Niklas, for liking it.
Yeah, I guess. No, I was just, because I had never, like prior in life, I had never really been someone who would perform. I never did like a rehearsal in my music school when I was a child, or I never played theater in high school or anything like that. So I was very concerned that, what if I actually don't really have that personality trait that makes people feel like, oh yeah, I have something that I need to tell the world, I need to show the world, I need to get up on that stage and just make the people see who I really am inside. So, I'm thankful that I sort of apparently do have part of that personality in myself.
Well, I think you have quite the stage personality, and you also have a podcast now, so that's really good. And I think that's something that you should really count your blessings, because it sort of also comes natural to you, because it's not a given. Because my mother had the biggest, I wanted to say hugest, but okay, so I did it anyway, hugest stage fright, and she gave up playing music because of that, because she didn't want anyone to hear her play, which would be an eternal shame. But that's just also an option that can happen to you. So if anyone is listening and you're being crippled by stage fright, let it go, let it go. Seriously, it's easier said than done, but there might be a hidden swan in you. Because I you didn't have any theater thing, and it made me think back. I played the centipede in Roald Dahl's Giant Peach story at some point.
I have no idea what that is.
Oh, you don't? Okay, so it's a book, and it's about a flying giant peach with insects, and the peach has grown, and the insects have also grown, and then they meet a boy, and okay. It's a real real page turner. Our first gig was super. We actually played our first gig as a combined band. We sort of lifted with the band of Sarah, our singer, bouzouki guitar player, because we weren't really great as seed, so we didn't have any gigs. And then Bets in the Belfry was her band. She wasn't in seed then, and we played at a smaller festival in a castle, and it was great. But it was not prestigious at all. It's actually interesting to sort of think back on that every band starts somewhere.
I mean,
what was your first gig?
Our first gig was, I don't really remember the first gig of the band, because the band already had existed for a year or a bit longer before me and Nina, my girlfriend, joined. But I think our first combined gig was at a small medieval fair, and the stage was just this weird big wooden box that we just stood in. That was like sort of like a box turned on its side. And then at that point we, Waldkauz, had sort of taken up the mantle of always bringing their own amplification, because in Germany there is a lot of medieval fairs, a lot of smaller medieval fairs also, but a lot of them don't have amplification, because the bands that usually play there have like just drums and bagpipes, so you don't really need amplification or microphones or anything. But Waldkauz at that point already had like drums and a harp, and you can't really have those two things on the stage and not have the harp amplified or the vocals. So we got there. I remember getting there super early and having to set up like the amplification and all of that stuff, so which I hadn't any experience with. So we were super stressed out, and then we played our first show ever to a you know, relatively small audience, and I think there are still pictures of that somewhere, and I think you can see, at least on my face, that I am somewhat tense.
I'd love to see that. Oh my god. Yeah, I think this is something for all the listeners to okay, this is a little exercise for you. Listen closely. Imagine your favorite band, however big, and then close your eyes and imagine them standing on an upside down turned wooden box, like the first gig of Wildcats, while plugging their own amplification. Every band has started somewhere, and that's sometimes a harsh reality to come back from. But sorry, I find it visible to see. I'd love to see those pictures, Niklas.
I'll try and dig it up, and I'm even willing to post it on our social media pages. So if you don't follow us there already, then do that. That's how you do promotion, right?
Super worth it.
Yeah, great, cool.
Yeah. This is going to, yeah. All the people are going to be, oh god, I just have to follow. So would you say that this first gig would also be your sort of low, or do you have further along the line a gig that really sort of made you question
life? I mean at that point I didn't really have any expectations of how a gig should go, you know, so I was just happy that I didn't like screw up or like forget my part in a song. But my low, I don't really think I have like whole concerts that are low points, but you know, sometimes on stage something will happen, like you'll mess up a part or, you know, do like a little mistake that is probably not even no one besides you or maybe your bandmates will notice, but that sort of pulls you out of the moment, and then I'm super bummed out and I freeze up. It doesn't really happen anymore because I've gotten more professional, I guess. But in the beginning, sometimes I would feel, you know, something small would go wrong and I would just feel terrible like about the whole thing. Like, oh no, what am I even doing up here? And like having the biggest self-doubts and then being really angry and disappointed with myself after the show and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't think I've ever had like a whole concert that was a low, but just parts of it were just, were just lingered on a small moment for too long.
Yeah, that is completely something the human mind is very good at for some reason, isn't it? And then afterwards, you ask your fellow bandies or people from the audience, like, oh my god, did you hear that? What? No? I didn't hear anything. And so that's completely fucky. And that's again what you said. I think it takes you out of the moment. And that is one of the worst things that can happen when playing this sort of music, that it sort of breaks through the magical cyclone of resonation. Yeah. So I can completely understand that. And with Seed, there is sort of like a gimmick going on right now, is that where we listen to live recordings, which I find very hard to do, by the way. And then just go, okay, where did Kuhn fuck up and how did he disguise his fuck up? And I sort of got grown up peace with that, but yeah, it's definitely something that goes through your mind. And it's actually weird because when I was in front of the stage, and I think a lot of people that watch a performance are so engrossed in the music that they don't realize, maybe I'm being presumptuous, because some of you probably do, that those people up there have so much going on and are actually striving for perfection, maybe for the audience, and it's, yeah, it's yeah. it's can be tough, and yeah.
No, I totally get what you mean. And also then the weird thing is that sometimes you go off stage and you just feel terrible about yourself and about how you sort of carried yourself through the whole thing. And then people, like members of the audience, will be like, "Oh, that was the greatest show ever that I saw of you." And you're like, "What?" But I was angry the whole time.
Yeah. It's sort of, you put some pressure on yourself that you have to deliver something. People are there to see something, to revel in a sort of mood that you're aiming to set in a perhaps a ritual that you are performing. So at this one point, which might be a combined high and low for me at the Castle Fest in 2017, when I was going through, I think, the deepest moment, the bad moments of my life, that during Thorny Vines, a song of ours, I just felt like I was going to faint, and I stopped singing, sort of looked around at my bandmates, and they were like, "Okay, so this is bad. He should actually still be singing." Sarah took over the singing, and I was like, "Oh, shit, I have to cancel this gig," which I was afraid of days in advance, weeks in advance. And then I was like, "Okay, I'm going to try one more thing. I'm going to sit on a chair and try to play the show anyway." And I managed. It was good. It was great. And then the audience delivers their love, like, in abundance. They're like, "Okay, it's okay, we got you, blah, blah." And then afterwards, I just felt guilty. Oh, my God, I sat down. I didn't move as much. People didn't see. It's so weird that because you sort of want to project something as emotional and sort of spiritual or a story with your music, anything short of that in the end feels like, "Oh, shit, I maybe broke immersion."
Yeah.
For the audience.
No, I totally get where you're coming from. That's something that can happen so easily. It's such a fragile thing that you're building when you're playing live. And I don't know, it's probably not healthy to be aware of it while you're doing it. And I think every musician tries their best not to sort of lose, or like not to get out of that zone that you're in when things are going well. But I think, even sometimes I think everyone who plays music on stage has that sometimes you're sort of overtaken by what you're doing. Like you'll play your part and then your brain goes, "Oh, wait, what even is coming next?" And you're like, your muscle memory is knows what's coming next, so you don't have to think about what you're playing, but then your brain gets in the way, like, "Oh, I don't know what to play next," and then you just screw up even though you know what you've been supposed to play. And yeah, it's such a fragile thing, being in the moment and like, yeah, what you were saying, like portraying the energy and creating that resonance.
Wow. Yeah. It's like if you stop feeling it, you start thinking and then you lose it. And that's completely, I think that goes for a lot of things in life. So where you can walk through a forest, not see it, and just think, sort stuff like that. So that definitely goes for a lot of musicians' minds. I've also seen some very interesting. That's why I always like to watch live DVDs a lot, because they have these weird addendums, and then musicians, which you completely revered, at some point talk about their sort of, well, that makes it sound weird, talk about their humanity. And they're like, "Oh, wow, yeah, maybe I didn't realize that it isn't as automatic as I thought." That sort of... And I'm not trying to be like, "Oh, wow, musicians, they're so great that they do this." It's just to make sort of people aware that a lot of shit is going on in people's minds, as well as people playing a really really cool show. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that also has really shown me, or I don't know, that sounds a bit presumptuous maybe, but now when I like watch interviews with other musicians, even like world famous musicians, and they talk about performing, there's often moments where I can relate, and it's so nice to see that that's something that there's things that everyone who performs goes through. And yeah, basically what you said, that there's no, sometimes that there is no difference between like a punk band that plays in front of 10 people and then I don't know, like fuck, I don't know, like AC/DC or whatever, who play in front of 10,000 people.
Yeah, yeah.
That they still go through the same struggle and through the same moments of doubt. And I think that's comforting.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I'm sure there's bands that sort of are playing their shows like it's their voicemail message. They've been there 1,000 times. It plays out the same. Doesn't really matter if it was great or not. But especially, I think in this genre, the bands are a lot. They don't really feel a lot of pressure necessarily. But I think in this genre, the gig works and resonates very well with people. If they are completely into it and are not so much as minding their gig, but feeling their gig. Wow.
No.
Yep.
I think I see where you're coming from.
I'm glad. I'm so glad.
Or at least I'm pretending.
Okay. Yeah. Well, probably.
No.
Yeah. It's interesting, actually. But I have to sort of bear with my ramblings. You can't be like, no, couldn't. We're shutting this thing down. This is just
bullshit. Maybe I should doing that. Maybe. Enough.
No.
You stop that right now.
Bad.
Let's get back to facts. Nope. So like talking about lows, but I think it's probably more fun and much more enjoyable to sort of delve into those memories, to talk about the highs or like your favorite experiences of playing live, like gigs that stood out because they were just awesome, or just small things that happen at every show that you always enjoy.
Okay, yes. I sort of have a slight tick going on, a physical tick when I get excited, and so I just had to do that away from the mic. A lot of things spring to mind. It has several dimensions. I'll just do a small list, I think. One is the pre gig excitement, which includes rehearsals and the way there. The way there can be so cool if you have a very cool band. Then you have another dimension, which is very important and might be underestimated by people, is the reception and sort of the around the gig hospitality thing, which is why there are hospitality riders. But then again, you can't really put happy emotions in your hospitality rider, which is actually a pretty good idea. We're going to do that. Then you have the gig, and then you have the after gig things. When those are all good and in sync, It's the perfect gig, and sometimes there's one of these aspects that is meh.
So what I'm getting from all of that is that we're probably going to be here for a while if you're going to go through all of that, right?
Well, yes, but I was actually going to ask you if you could relate it all with what I just said.
Oh, no, absolutely. And I think it's actually, I would love to hear about all of these things from you. So I actually don't mind. I think, totally. Every aspect of that can have and they all influence each other also. So it's totally reasonable to talk about all of those things.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you want me to give an example of all of these things, or do you want to go first?
Maybe we can sort of divvy it up. Like, we start like with getting to the gig, things that are cool about that, and then you say, you know, or things that can suck about it, and then you start telling your side, and then I'll tell what I think, and then we go to the next point, sort of.
Oh my God, Niklas is so professional. He keeps me in line. It's good. It's great. Because last week's intro was great when I tried it. Okay, yeah. So, getting to the gig. The cool thing is playing abroad. Not because it's abroad and you can say, hello, yes, my band also plays in Italy and the UK. Well, yes, there was only 10 people in front of the stage, but yes, we've played abroad. It's because if you played your cards right, you have a great band. You have a band that is resonating with each other. And, sorry, oh my God. Okay, yeah, that's in sync with each other and that likes each other as like the family you could choose. And you get to be in a confined space with them for a long time. And that is something I always look forward to tremendously. And I'm not even kidding. I love that.
I think your car drives are probably more involved than ours. We usually our drummer Peter is driving because he's the only one who's allowed to drive like the van plus the caravan, because in Germany you need a special license to do that, so he's the designated driver by design, and I'm like the co-pilot, so we're always in conversation and like listening to music or like podcasts and stuff like that and talking, and then everyone in the back is usually like zoning out on their mobile devices, like either like watching a movie or listening to music or sleeping or like doing some sort of craft that like that you can do while driving in a car, and so it's usually pretty quiet back there, and Peter and me in the front are the like, ones.
What?
Yeah.
What? This is completely alien to me.
There will be like a moment in the beginning, like when everyone is like still like, yeah, let's do this. Woo, let's listen to really loud music and listen to ridiculous songs, but then like after an hour, Yeah, that sort of feeling that dies down, which is what I'm fine with that. Like, if you drive for 6 hours and it's just high energy all the time, that sounds exhausting.
Yeah, well, try 13 hours with high energy. Well, we also did... We're sort of cheating because none of our band members have a driver's license. So we all... when we went on our first date with our significant others, the first things we asked... Do you have a driver's license? And well, surprise, almost all of them do. So they drive and we have fun in the van. A thing we also do is we all submit hours of music depending on how long the journey is. And so we have sort of like a playlist going on. So we sort of create our own party. But of course we have moments that we grow quiet, but... I don't know. Yeah, I think we might just be very weird at some points. And we went to... We've got to treffen with Kati Ran at some point to play with Leaf and Seed Comancho. And I think at some point she was like, save me.
We also have a playlist for the car that I sort of curate, and then there I will put the occasional funny song in there. But then if you're just driving and you're just on the Autobahn and it's hour 5 and you're just like, oh, well, let's just skip that song and just listen to whatever else is on the playlist. So we have a lot of it. Mostly it's just... I don't know. It's a lot of folk, obviously, but mostly just relaxed music. But sometimes it sucks because me and Peter, we have a very different music tastes. So stuff that I would find relaxing or engaging, it's like, oh no, turn that off, that's so annoying. And then he'll listen to some like brass arrangements and I'm like, no, this is terrible. And then yeah, so it's you know, it's a struggle. It's but we'll make do. We're making do.
The driver is king, Niklas. The driver is king, always.
No.
No, I don't want it to be like that. So it's fair. It's actually funny that you also have this playlist thing going on. I wonder if this is a. I can hardly imagine this is a coincidence.
No,
I imagine a lot of bands sort of do this.
Yeah, yeah, I bet so. So yeah, getting to the gig. You know, obviously, it sucks if there is like a traffic jam and stuff like that. So
Stau.
Stau. Yeah.
That's Ooh. What we always yell through the van.
Yeah. I feel like with German words, you just generally yell them, right?
Yeah, Schmetterling.
So rude. Well, but that's I guess...
Butterfly, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's true. Right. But yeah. I actually wanted to tell a story. I don't know. I don't want to... I wonder if I'm allowed to tell it. But I just recently thought of it again with it being spring and everything. We were... So I'm just going to tell it. So we were driving on the Autobahn and there was a traffic jam. So and we were on the far left of the street. So that part of the street was separated by a little stripe of green where some plants were growing. And then on the other side of the green, the Autobahn continued, but in the opposite direction. You know, a street. Yeah. And then we could only drive like real slow. And Peter was sort of dangling his hand outside of the window, just touching, like letting his hands wander aimlessly over the greenery, over the shrubbery. And then he just picked a leaf and put it over his hand and like slapped it to make like a loud noise, you know, to make the leaf pop. Is that like, do you get what I'm saying?
He picked a leaf and then slapped his hand to make a loud noise.
And yeah, he put the leaf, like he made like a circle with his hand and then he put like the leaf on top of the circle and then he slapped the leaf and then it, like, that's a thing that you can do and then like the leaf will rip and it makes a popping sound.
Yeah. Okay.
And well, anyway, so that happened and he just threw the leaf out and we continued driving and then after a couple more minutes, he sort of looked at his hand and it was all red and swollen.
Mm.
And turned out that leaf was a hazelnut leaf and Peter is very allergic against hazelnuts. And so his hands was getting redder and redder. And luckily we had like some anti-allergic nose spray in the car because, and then he just had to use some of that on his hand because it just kept getting worse. So, you know, even if you're just driving like very slowly on the Autobahn, it's a very dangerous place.
Oh my God. Yes. That sounds like a fucking, like a fucking nightmare. It's a bit, but yeah, that sort of stuff happens. I would like to see a compilation DVD of all like pagan folk bands traveling to festivals because I love this story and there's probably loads of these kinds of stories around. Yeah, so guys, getting to a gig is not without hazards. We are now at the pre-gig hospitality part.
Yes. Do you want to go first?
Do I?
Yes. You should.
Okay. Okay. Well, it's a funny thing that I think a lot of people can relate to it when I put it like this. You've booked a holiday. And, well, okay, there's one thing different. You've paid good money for your holiday, which is different. I think for most all bands that they don't have to pay good money. Okay, I don't know. But you've paid good money. So you are pulling up to the driveway of your dream holiday house. You've worked the entire year to relax at a pool, to have a beautiful bed without bed bugs, no whiny work emails or texts. and you drive up to the driveway, and it sucks. It looks horrible. It's muddy. The door has been banged down. Okay, you wake up. It's gorgeous. It's everything you ever wanted. It's the festival. Oh, wait. Kun, don't break immersion. It's the holiday house that you've always dreamed of. It looks perfect. There's a hospitable house lord, whatever, saying, hello, welcome. We're so happy to have you here. That's sort of what happens in my head when I drive up to a festival that I don't know. So maybe I'm overreacting and I'm living everything very hypersensitive like, but the driving up to the festival and then the first person that sort of talks to you as a festival official sets the tone. And then you ask, okay, hello, we are here to play. Is there somewhere we can park our car? Wait, what? You have a car? Yes, we'd like to park a car. Okay, you can park your car over there. Where's the stage? Well, it's 10 miles that way. Well, we sort of... Could we maybe unload our instruments very close to the stage? Well, no, that's not an option. Okay, so here you see there's some dissonance between the reception and the thing. So that's something that can happen. What also can happen is, yes, of course, we have your parking spot here and a valet, and you can put your instruments and all your clothes, and you have a dressing room and your own bathroom there, which will make sure that you have no stress whatsoever before the gig, so you can deliver what you came here to do. So there's sort of two extremes, and you're destined to live both. And every band that you watch on stage probably has lived both. And the fun thing is, when you are playing a show on stage, you can't really, you shouldn't be able to notice which one they had. That's sort of the pressure the band feels. And that's maybe a dimension that some audience members don't know. And sadly, it's also a dimension that some festival organizers don't realize that it's there. You sort of want to be able to focus what you have to do. And that is not always a given. But thank the gods, it often is. It often is. And there's such great festival organizers there. And I have a really cool story about that. I'm just going to name them. Celtic Night Gaelua, where we played the seat, is super great. We'll go into that some other time, because I'm sort of hogging the stage here already with my spirited talk. Obviously, a lot of emotions have welled up in this hospitality aspect of gigging, Niklas. Sorry.
Yeah, about what? You know, you really went off on a tangent there. Love it. But I don't think I have anything... I think our experiences are probably pretty similar in that regard, because we, I think we're at a similar level with our band, so we have experienced being like the... sort of like at the bottom end and being like treated to the worst things, you know, just because we're not a like super huge band. But we've also been to festivals where everyone was super nice and we felt treated so well. And I think to us in the beginning, so for a long time, I mean, not a long time, it's not even been like 10 years that we're doing this thing. So, but in the first two and a half years, we would really only play medieval fairs and not even, you know, specifically big ones. Just, you know, getting the good practice in of playing live and, you know, just enjoying ourselves. And it was fine. But it also was, we needed to take care of everything. So I mentioned earlier that during that time we set up the amplification of the festival. We brought our own speakers and our own mixing desk and our own tent for the mixing desk, because nothing would be provided, because people weren't used to bands on that level needing that kind of stuff, but we wanted to play this type of music that we needed amplification for. So we would always sort of get in trouble sometimes because we're like, yeah, we need to put a tent in front of the stage. But then some of the organizers would be like, what? No, that's not, such a thing did not exist in the medieval times. And well, yeah, but you know, you booked us and it's just very clear in our contract that we're going to do this. So, you know, so yeah. When we started playing other festivals where you were taken care of by, you know, by staff and by, you know, just being taken seriously as an artist and as a musician, we were so not used to it of like, when people would help unload our things or like build up our microphone stands, we're like, what? This is something that happens to you, to people? That's crazy. So yeah, I think, that was a crazy change. And you know, even still to this day, we don't do the thing any longer where we go to places and bring our own amplification. We have said goodbye to that because it just became too stressful. But yeah, I think with hospitality, you've sort of gotten to everything that there is really to say about that.
Yeah, it's actually sad what you said. Like, so you come, you drive up and you start unloading your equipment. They're like, what's that? Well, it was in our sort of contract to be able to deliver the show that you wanted us to come here for. Like, no, it's not going to be possible. Okay, so obviously you didn't read it, even though you signed it. Are we leaving? No, we don't want to disappoint the audience, so we'll have to make do. Which is interesting. This is sort of a gimmick going around that you add in your hospitality ride. We only want blue M&Ms. We want 3 bottles of the highest mead. And we want a highest quality mead. We want a single malt Lafroyer of 15 year aged. And if the audience or if the organizer sends you like, okay, guy, we can't be doing this for you. And they're like, okay, thank you for reading it. Please disregard that and take care of the serious stuff, because it's actually weird. They sort of expect you to deliver a show, but they don't really want to give you the minimum requirements that you've specified for the show, which is interesting. It's like playing a high tier game on your low end PC, and you're like, geez, man, why are you not running very well? Well, you didn't deliver the minimum RAM memory.
Yeah.
Yep. So yes, I am also a gamer.
Yeah. Obviously, but I yeah. In the same time, it's such a sometimes it feels like such a thin line to walk, because on the other hand, you don't want to seem entitled, you know, you don't want to be like, oh, what? There's no champagne in the backstage. Yep. We won't play. But then they're like, what? There's no backstage. Where can we keep our things safe? So, yeah, it's sometimes, and also then there's festivals that are not super well organized, but not because the people don't care about the artists, but because the people there may not have like a lot of experience with organizing a festival, or they have limited funds. And then you don't want to destroy, or you don't want to be mean or rude to people who just want to create something good. And so sometimes it's hard to walk that line between, okay, we really need those things. We really need those things. We can't play otherwise. But then also be like, okay, we'll find a way around it. And I think, that is an important thing to sort of find out for yourself. Like, what is the...
Yeah, that's a really tricky balance, because it's... Of course, it's weird to... Well, maybe they don't realize it, to let people come with very expensive wooden instruments and then don't, for example, deliver a tent at least. To store that, and like, oh well, we didn't think of that. Okay, well, we don't want to be do we keep this child friendly? We don't want to be unfriendly about it, but it's sort of a necessity. Sort of stuff like that happens, which is interesting. Like you said, some organizers might be inexperienced, but then again, it's tough for me sometimes to sort of justify that, and okay, this might be rubbing some people the wrong way. Well, should they then be organizing a festival and requesting people to come over there with instruments that mean the world to them?
Yeah.
It's a fine line, like you said.
So, but yeah, is there any, like, do you remember anything super cool, like where every point on your hospitality rider was fulfilled or something like that?
Well, I definitely have some, like, there's every festival has their sort of super niche where one of the things is really good. And like I said earlier, that was sadly a festival that doesn't exist anymore in Belgium. That was the Celtic Night in Heluwe, in a very nice town. They had a camping, and it was not really, it was more like a music festival. They had didn't have a lot of stands. They had some really nice craftsmen, but they had a very huge tent, a perfect atmosphere, leaves all around. They put up their own decorations that would fit every band they invite, and then the backstage hospitality and the food and the accommodations for the night were grand, and they would wake you up with the most beautiful breakfast, which sort of I don't know, the energy that you were able to put in the gig, you're sort of still feeling it after the gig and the next morning, which it made that warm fuzzy bubble, which was great. So that was something that the people did, and I think we talked about it last episode, the Yggdrasil festival. That was where no human factors are coming into play for my scenario right now, but the view from the stage was huge mountains, nature stretching as far as the eye could see, and that was wow. That was nature's hospitality, basically.
Nice. That sounds lovely. Yeah.
And what grand stories do you have hospitality wise?
And I'm always happy when our drink wishes are fulfilled.
Oh my god, you're alcoholic.
No, not even not exclusively alcohol, but I mean obviously also alcohol. It's just nice when, because it's a very clear sign that they read your hospitality rider. So then we always ask, we sort of, I mean, I'm running a bit ahead with topics, but we have this pre-show ritual where we stand in a circle, and then we pass around a bottle of wine, and everyone takes a sip, and then we hold hands, and then we take 3 deep breaths together. And we usually do that with white wine, but we always ask for like a fruit wine on the hospitality rider. So sometimes when we go to places in Germany that are known for being regions where they grow grapes or like where they make wine, then sometimes we had the pleasure of having like very cool regional specialty wines, and that's always something that I really enjoy. Or like most of the people in the band are vegetarians too. So when people take care of like making, like supplying nice vegetarian food, that's also always a great thing, because festival food, usually not the most
nutritious.
At least not for vegetarians.
Yeah. I definitely, we have some issues with that as well. Like, okay, so we have this dish, we'll just take out all the nutritious parts, and then that's vegetarian, right? Yes. Okay, but there's no calories left. But yeah, that's great. When you have that, what you said about the wine, sort of the regional thing, that they really paid attention to that, then sort of maybe weird what I'm saying, the gig has already started because it fits. You're already, you get the perfect opportunity to already start charging up for what you're going to give out on stage.
Oh yeah, totally.
For the people that are like, Jesus, hear them talk. Their car had to be parked far away, or oh my god, their food was not up to par. It's not about that. That we're like, okay, we need that. No, it's just if you want to give that what you would love to give to the audience, to give the perfect show, the least distractions there are, so major discomforts can really sort of throw you off. And yeah. So you're sort of asked to give your spirituality, your character, your person to the audience, which is tough if some of these aspects cannot be recharged or be at full capacity before the game.
Yeah, no, I very much agree. Sometimes when there is, I don't know, it doesn't always have to be like the sole fault of the organizers, or I don't know, let's not call it fault, but sometimes it's not even the circumstances, but maybe sometimes it's also just the size of the stage, or like the schedule is very tight, and sometimes you can't really take a breather right up until the moment where you start to play. Like you're setting up and then you go on stage and you just have to start. And when you go, and then you can't really get to that cool, like calm place that I think a lot of people really like, you know, people really like having before a show, like before you start playing. Kuhn, I'm just thinking, yeah. We are already again, once again, nearing the 1 hour mark, and we've not even started playing music. So I'm thinking,
I would
sorry,
make it a two-parter.
Exactly, the first two-parter of Mead and Moonlight.
Ooh. Holy damn. That will be a legendary moment that people will talk about for years to come.
So, dear people listening, this was part one of our live music episode. And now we're...
Niklas, we're still going to do the recommendations, right?
Totally. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
No,
sorry.
It's all right. Do you want to start? Gone.
Well, yes, I can. Okay, hello, guys. Welcome back. Like Niklas said, we're actually going to make this a two-parter because I think it's fairly obvious that we have quite a large pool of experiences and heart to tell from. Is that even English? Well, I don't know. I'm Dutch. What do I know? So instead of rushing through the last categories, we're going to not withhold you from the recommendations while we are ending the episode. And I'm starting with my first recommendation, which in the category of this episode, live performances, is a very maybe strange recommendation if for the people that know me and know the music that I make, but this is actually the first sort of gig that super blew me away at a fantasy / medieval festival. That was the first year, yes, again, sorry, Castlefest opened up their Thursday night for an opening concert. And there was Corvus Corax. And like said in earlier episodes, I might not be the biggest bagpipes fan, but this was Corvus Corax, Cantus Varanus. Why did I use a German accent for the Cantus Varanus? I don't know. Well, they're German. It was just super epic. They had this queen-like opera singer. It was also... Okay, so check out Corvus Corax, Cantus Varanus live show, and then especially the song Ovarium Fortunae. It just took me to another world. And it's not generally a band that I listen to all the time, but live, this Countess Brana show was
nice.
And you, Niklas,
so I'm what?
Recommendation. Oh, yeah. No, I'm just asking. I want to hear your recommendation.
Okay. So my first recommendation is a song that I would love to one day maybe hear being performed by that band. And it's, you know, it's a band that most of you probably know. It's the Swedish band Hidden in Ghana, sort of like a folktronic band. I think they're actually active again and playing shows, so, you know, might happen. And it is a song of their third album, Tre, and the song is called Pornopolska. It's just a very high-energy song that makes you want to dance. No real other reasoning behind that. Yeah.
It definitely is, and they use the high squeaky voices perfectly. I can't imagine that moment in the living rooms. You're like, okay, so I sort of came up with this. And they go, and there are people like, yeah, that's good.
It's probably, I think they're singing in Finnish, so it's probably something very dark. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean,
dark porn. Yeah.
I mean, that's not, I don't want to get into that topic, but it's a dark, dark thing.
We definitely
I don't think we're, but none of us are well equipped in that regard, talking about that kind of topic. I don't think.
Well, nothing is what it seems.
Okay, let's just...
My second recommendation is by a band that was even seen in the Netherlands last year, is the band Asynje, spelled Asynje. And it's a band with people like Jakob Lund, Martin Sebeck, and sorry, I just only say her first name, Nana. Sorry, she's a legend to me. Asynje, and the song that I would like to recommend, and we will also be adding to our playlist, is Vinder from their album Galdr. Listen to it, let it speak to you.
That's excellent choice right there, Kuhn. So my second choice is sort of a follow-up maybe to our last episode where we talked about, you know, pagan folk. And talked about, like, oh, I wonder what Asian pagan folk would sound like. And I thought of this band, or maybe this, yeah, this region, this type of folk music in general. And I'm talking about Mongolian folk music. And one band that I'd love to see live, I've watched, they have a live video that I've watched, like of a whole concert that I've watched countless times, and I'm gonna butcher the pronunciation of that name because I have no idea how to pronounce Mongolian words. And it's the band is called Hun Hua Tu, and they have a song that I like a lot. It's called Frighten the Crane. Now that I'm thinking about it, actually, they might not be Mongolian, but there is a bordering region that I think that's called Tuva. And I think they might actually
they are from
that.
But Tuva.
It's a yes. The culture.
Yes.
Yeah, right. But I think it's still connected to that musical tradition.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, all those borders and all those countries are made up anyway. So, every border is in every country. So, you know, it doesn't really matter. But I think they are from that region. And for those of you who do not know that, it's a very yeah, it's lovely music and it's really entrancing and really takes you to those places. So that's my second recommendation.
And some of you might have noticed, we are adding these recommendations to a playlist. So while the playlist may not amount to much at the moment, it will keep growing linearly. Is that, I don't know if that's a word. Every week. Our recommendations will be added, and we're also putting in one of our own band's songs in there. But again, if people have recommendations, they're like, oh my god, why are they not naming this band? Let us know in the comments. Send us a private message or a funny gif with your recommendation, and perhaps you might broaden our horizon in the genre.
Yeah, and there's one other thing that I wanted to add, is that at the beginning we talked a lot about having guests on, and I think that is still something that we want to do. Just I think we're still sort of learning how to do this, and I'm very stressed about editing the track of a third person into the whole thing. So I'm currently researching how to best do that, if there's anything that I can do to optimize my workflow in that regard, because I am very nervous about those technical things. I'm just an amateur in that regard. So if any one of you has a cool way of maybe like something that would help us in that regard, feel free to drop us a line if you have the technical know-how. I'd love to have some input on that.
Yeah, this whole thing is definitely not a given. I bought a new microphone and audio interface just for this podcast. So, yes, the technical things are maybe invisible to the naked eye, but it's definitely a thing. And sadly, it would also be super cool to meet up with these bands in person and to meet up with you, Niklas, in person. But sadly, that's not going to happen right now. But that will not stop us from creating this podcast. Be wary of your power as a listener. If you feel the inkling to share this podcast, please do so. And you will be blessed with many, many beautiful things.
I come bearing many gifts.
Yes.
That was an insider just for the two of us. Or maybe not. I think there's probably fans of that particular program out there. Write us if you got that reference.
Yes. And I think this is a very good moment to say, okay, guys, who's excited for part two of this episode?
I sure am.
Yes, me too. So, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. We love you. Well, I was going
most
to say,
of you.
Most of you. Yeah, there's this one girl, man. No,
I know
what you mean. It's my turn. Okay, so, thank you so much. We're really still enjoying this. We're looking forward to part two. And this was Koen and Niklas for Meat and Moonlight, the Pagan Folk Podcast.